Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to a very special episode of the Empire Podcast. This one is dedicated to the LFF. You ask for miracles, Theo. I give you the LFF. What is the LFF? You may cry. It is, of course, the London Film Festival, which is on right now as we speak. It started on Wednesday, October 4th. It ends on the 15th of October, and as ever, Empire is embedded deep within the LFF, dug in like an Alabama tick, and there is so much to talk about with this year's film festival. It is truly, truly exciting. It's one of the world's great film festivals, and I've assembled an incredible panel of Empire journalists who were available to come and talk about the LFF and how excited they are about this year's LFF. Beth Webb is here.
Hello, all right.
Yes, I'm good, Beth Webb. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. All right, LF Beth, I've called myself on the...
LF Beth on Squadcast, yes. Next up is a man whose Squadcast name is simply The Movies. That's how much the LFF means to him. It's Vin Diesel.
Yes.
It's Ben Travis.
My plea for there to be a specific Vin Diesel strand of the LFF has once again fallen on deaf ears, but I'm going to try again next year. We will have, you have your cult strand, you have your galas, you have your Vin Diesel strand. It's got to happen.
Vin Diesel, he's all the food groups, isn't he, in one?
All the cinematic food groups.
All the food groups of cinema.
He contains multitudes.
He really does. He really does. Last but not least is someone whose Squadcast name is simply Sophie. And you may think that's because she gave up and had no inspiration, but I think it's actually a kind of interesting attempt to saying Sophia Coppola, director of Priscilla.
It was a play on Priscilla.
That's exactly what it was. Sophie Butcher, hello, welcome.
Hello. I'm wishing I'd gone for Chicken Run Call on Dawn of the Sophie now.
Dawn of the Butcher, more like.
Dawn of the... Oh, no.
Could I suggest Butchers of the Flower Moon?
Oh, okay, yeah. That's a real missed opportunity from me there.
We may have to send this one to VAR. Anyway, listen, before we get into the LFF, let's hear from a couple of the directors who are actually part of the LFF this year, who have films playing at the LFF. First up, you're going to hear from Michael Winterbottom, the legendary British director who returns to the big screen with Shosanna, which is a drama set in 1930s Tel Aviv. And then after Michael Winterbottom, you're going to hear from first-time director Randall Park, whose film Shortcomings is also playing at the LFF. But he, of course, you will know him as an actor. He's been in many, many things, including, of course, our beloved MCU as Jimmy Woo. But first up, you're going to hear from Michael Winterbottom talking about Shosanna, but also talking about the London Film Festival in general. Enjoy. We're delighted to be joined on this Empire Podcast LFF special by Michael Winterbottom, the director of Shosanna. How are you, sir?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad. We're in the middle of the LFF frenzy, and that's where I want to start. This festival in particular, what does it mean to you? Because film festivals are hugely important.
Yeah, obviously film festivals are very important. I don't really have anything interesting to say because all the platitudes are true. Because it is, obviously you say, whenever you go to any film festival, they ask you, what do you think about this festival? And what you say is it's really important, it's great, it's very important for independent cinema, it's great to have an enthusiastic audience, it's great for audiences to see films from around the world. All those platitudes are true, but everyone says them at every festival, so it's probably they're probably not worth repeating.
Well, I think we're done. Thanks, Michael. That is all very, very true. That's for sure. But does the LFF mean something to you? I imagine you've had a lot of movies at the LFF over the years.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I started going to LFF before I'd made films, so it was like a great way of watching films and sort of feeling a little bit closer to people who made films. And then I think year after I came out of college, I edited a friend's film, a friend called Mark Evans, and he had a 40-minute film shown at the London Film Festival. So I think, to be honest, that was probably the most exciting time. It was when I'd edited a short film that was shown at the film festival. It was the time I was most excited to be at the London Film Festival.
You had the sense of pride.
Since then, I've had the pleasure of sharing stage with Boris Johnson when he was Mayor of London, introducing our film as his pick of London film. So London's great. Obviously it's our local film festival, so it's great in that sense.
What was that experience like, the Boris Johnson experience?
Fortunately, I've managed to block most of it from my mind.
Yeah, surreal, I can imagine. But I think one of the things that sets the LFF apart, you hear these stories of people going to Venice and Toronto and Cannes and having 8, 10, 12-minute standing ovations. We're far too British for that, Michael.
Yeah, that's good. Although I'm obviously hoping that Shoshana's going to get a 10-minute standing ovation on Saturday.
This is a film, eventually you get this film off the ground. Is a, would you consider a largely British film or in terms of financing?
No, weirdly, it's an Italian film. It's technically a co-production, but it's Italian finance. And so it was sort of bizarre, but anyway, that's, and we shot it, although it's set in Tel Aviv, we shot in Italy.
So does that mean on Saturday night at the LFF, this is going out after that, but you will be joined by your cast? Because obviously American productions and American co-funded productions can't do that at the moment. So
no, exactly. Yeah. We're British. I think technically we're UK Italy co-production, so we're not party to any disputes. So when we went to Toronto, Douglas was there and Irina, who plays Shoshana, was there. And I think on Saturday we'll have Douglas and Harry and possibly Ian Hart. I'm not sure, quite sure about Ian Hart.
All right. Well, Michael, I'll let you go off and prepare for tomorrow night at the LFF. Do you have a routine now at the LFF? How do you get through the gala experience?
No, I think we're going to meet. For a few drinks first, and then turn up.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, there's a 10-minute standing ovation coming your way, Michael Winterbottom. Pleasure as always. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was Michael Winterbottom. Next up, here is Randall Park. Enjoy. Randall Park, welcome. I was going to say welcome to the London Film Festival, but you're in Los Angeles having your own offshoot film festival going right now.
Yeah, my own personal film festival here in LA, yeah.
But still, we're very, very excited. I mean, Shortcomings is tremendous, and this is a film that began its journey at a film festival for you.
Yeah, for sure. We got into the Sundance Film Festival. Which was a goal of ours, but one that, you know, I mean, just the chances were, you know, I knew how many films they get submitted and how difficult it is to get in. So it was one of those. Yeah, you know, that would be great, but let's plan for something else. And then we got in, and it was amazing.
So with the London Film Festival, obviously you're not here, but is it something you've experienced before?
The London film? No, I haven't. I haven't, which is why I'm so bummed to not be out there. But I've heard such lovely things, and was very, very touched to have our film screen there.
What does it mean to a film, to a debut film, first of all, but also a film that is on the lower spectrum of the budget scale, I would say, to get out there and into film festivals?
Well, I think that that's really it in a lot of ways. I feel like the film festivals allow films like ours a chance to get seen, to get embraced, to get acquired, to have a story like ours, which was never going to be funded by a major studio. It just is very challenging type of movie to get made in these times. So it's truly a passion project in a lot of ways for a lot of us, myself included, and especially. So to be able to premiere at a major film festival, but also to be able to be embraced by so many film festivals, it allows us a chance to be seen. And to be, to get written about, and to help us get the word out, and it also offers this sense of legitimacy. You know, oh gosh, we're at the London Film Festival. This means that we're doing something good.
You're doing all right. And the festival experience for you, obviously, you're not going to have that experience this weekend at the LFF, but. What is it like as a director going there? I imagine it's very different from, or maybe it isn't, maybe it's exactly the same, but as going to a festival as an actor.
I hadn't been to too many film festivals as an actor. So for me, a lot of it was very new. But it was really, really just the festivals that we've gone to with Shortcomings have all been really just so fun and so heartening in a lot of ways, just to meet other filmmakers, other folks who've been through something, a similar process, people who have made films that they're super passionate about and that may not have been embraced by any sort of studio system. But because of that passion to tell the story, that shared passion, there is this kind of immediate camaraderie with other filmmakers, and then also, you know, the festival goers who are most of them are there because they love film, and to be able to have these audiences watch your film is just a very special experience.
Do those conversations lead anywhere? Have you talked, you know, you obviously don't have to tell me which projects, but do you collaborate with other filmmakers as a result of those little chats at the Sundance bar, you know, at a bar in Sundance at 3 a.m?
nothing like solid, but definitely relationships have been formed and friendships have been formed, and those are often like the start of really great things, so I wouldn't be surprised if some projects years from now come about because of the seed that was planted during these great film festivals.
And you go, that's it, that's my film festival baby right there.
Yeah, that's right.
Hopefully you'll be back at the LFF in a couple of years' time as well with your film festival baby, and we can have a chat then as well.
That's right.
Amazing. Randall Park, thank you so much indeed.
Of course. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, so that was Randall Park. And now it's time for us to have a quick chat about the LFF. Guys, obviously the LFF's been going on for quite some time. What was your first LFF? What do you remember? What are your memories of the LFF?
Oh my goodness. Well, this betrays my age a little bit, but I remember when I used to do film blogging and I used to do a lot of red carpet, kind of press pens. And I remember one of the first, I can't remember what the film was, but my first LFF party was a film that starred Chris O'Dowd. And he was traveling, and it's something to do, there was like a girl band.
Yes,
who
yes,
were like
that's
the
right.
Supremes. Chris, I knew you'd know this. What was the film?
The Sapphires?
That was it. And then I went to the after party and he was singing with this kind of Supreme style band up on stage, this like kind of Motown song. And I remember it being really surreal. But
wow.
I'm an LFF vet. I've done many a press pen. Or my favorite press pen memory was feeding Sholto Copley's pecs. for Free Fire, I was doing like the rounds, and I was talking to Sholto Copley. I'd already spoken to Michael Smiley, and then Michael Smiley just came back, started cuddling Sholto Copley while I was speaking to him, and then just reached over, took my hand and put it, I'm gesturing, this isn't good for the podcast, just slowly put it on Sholto Copley's very, very hard pec. There's a picture of it somewhere. So that was like undoubtedly my most bizarre red carpet pen moment, was feeling Sholto Copley's pec. Chris's face has just kind of gone in on itself.
I can't get over that. How does that feel? What? Do you need to talk to someone? Do you need to file a complaint? I mean, what's going on
It was completely consensual. I was beside myself. I was laughing so much, and they were having a big cuddle. And he just gently placed my hand on Sholto Copley's pec. And it was just the funniest thing. And it was a really hard pec. I was surprised. Like, Sholto Copley doesn't need to be hench, does he? He doesn't need to
Who
be.
Knew?
No, definitely not Sholto Copley.
Probably. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever felt someone's pecs. Certainly not in the line of duty. That's interesting. Wow, blimey.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I beat that.
But Beth, don't worry about your age, because whenever I first started covering the LFF, it was in the old-timey days when you used to see a film, then you had to run out into the foyer and cram yourself into phone booths and then call it in using those little rotary phones. You go, I got a hot scoop. Psycho. Stick around for the shower sequence. It's going to be amazing. No, I've been covering the LFF for a long time. We used to do footy blog episodes dedicated to the LFF. Sam Toy and I used to do daily footy blog episodes. we did some of our most deranged work. There was one where we did a stop motion Damon Wise. Because it was the Fantastic Mr. Fox. We did the Fantastic Mr. Fox premiere, and therefore we did a very, very rudimentary stop motion introduction to that, where it was basically a John Barrowman action figure that we were animating to make it look like it was me. And we did one. Oh my God, I can't believe we did this. We did one once where we presented our LFF coverage the next day as if it were a documentary in which it was revealed, now bear with me here, stay with me here, in which it was revealed that the LFF wasn't real and that I was actually an actor playing every person at the LFF. And we went and we shot something on a green screen with a suit with all the balls on it, and you know, and I was pretending to be Maggie Smith or something like that.
Oh my god!
Absolutely deranged.
What budget did Empire used to have? Yeah. When did we have a green screen?
we had no budget, but I've been covering it for a long time. Oh god, yeah. Scary. But Ben and Sophie are younger. You're bairns. You've just woken up. The world has just kissed you for the first time with sunlight. You open your eyes and you see stretching before you the London Film Festival. What are your first memories?
I haven't been in the game as long as either of you do. My first LFF was actually a virtual one in 2020 during lockdown. Because I was trying to freelance as a film journalist, and because of COVID, obviously LFF went online, and it became much more accessible to me as someone who lived in the Northeast and couldn't afford to come down to London and stay for 2 weeks. So I managed to get accreditation and watched a ton of films online. I put in like holiday from my job and watched all the films that I could. I watched Relic, I watched Possessor, I watched Supernova. Mm. I think that was the year of Steve McQueen's Small Axe and Kajillionaire and all these films. And Shirley as well, that was a good one. Ooh, and yeah. So, yeah, I watched a ton of stuff online. So I didn't get to have that in-person film festival experience at first, but got to watch a lot of stuff ahead of time. It was my first big experience of doing that. I'd been to Glasgow Film Festival that year, but London was kind of a step up. And it was a huge help for me in finding freelance work and getting to be at Empire eventually. And then, yeah, last year I went along a little bit and did some queuing, some real life queuing. But I think this year is probably the time that I'm going to see the most stuff in person. So it's only my third one.
Very exciting. Do you remember the lockdown? Surreal.
Yeah.
I tell you what, though, that was the silver lining in terms of like accessibility and things. Was a great way for people outside of London to see those films? Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was not a chance I'd have been able to do half the stuff I did if it hadn't been for lockdown.
Yeah.
Benjamin.
Yeah, I haven't done a huge amount of LFF stuff in the past, largely because so much of it is through the day, especially the press and industry screenings are very early in the morning or through into kind of work time, basically. I'm doing my job. I'm busy writing about the films that I don't have time to see. But I've had a couple of amazing LFF screening memories. I saw a few things that then either went straight to streaming or it was a chance to see something on the big screen. I saw Ben Wheatley's Colin Burstead a few years back, and that was such a joy to watch on the big screen. And I mean, great that everybody could see it in such an open way, but it went pretty much straight to the BBC iPlayer, I think.
Yes, it did. And there it still lives.
Yeah, it's still on there. It's a great film. That was a really good one to see on the big screen. The other one is that Sophie and I last year saw Rob Savage's Dash Cam with a sold out crowd at the Prince Charles Cinema, of just like hopped up horror nerds watching this really gleefully nasty 70 minute thrill ride, really fucked up horror movie. It was just that kind of screening is completely what I live for. And I love that film festivals, including the LFF, really mix up the kind of prestige galas and heavyweight Oscar-leaning dramas with just like, here's some really scuzzy stuff and we're going to show it in the Prince Charles. And the atmosphere in that room was just incredible. And yeah, seeing dash cam with a big group of people is exactly how it was meant to be seen. So yeah, I really, really treasure that screening. And yeah, that was an LFF one last year.
I think that was actually the year before, Ben. It's 2021.
What year is this? What?
I think it's 2023. So that was 2021. That's gone fast.
You've caught me in the moment that I've suddenly realized it's not actually 2022.
All right. Well, let's focus on... Hang on, let me just Google it. 2023. Which is, there's quite a number of bangers this year. Quite a number of big name directors. Quite a number of great first time directors. Great number of British films. Let's pick out a couple of films each that we're all very, very excited about. Let's go in reverse order of the people who just spoke. Ben, let's start with you again.
Okay, well, obviously I'm going to lean towards some of the animated stuff, and we have to talk about The Boy and the Heron, which I've seen it already. I saw it in Toronto, and it is incredible. But for this to be at the LFF is a huge deal. This is the new Studio Ghibli movie, the comeback of Hayao Miyazaki 10 years after The Wind Rises. He was once again meant to retire. He once again refused to do so and just kept working. And yeah, his latest film is another big fantastical epic. They released it in Japan this summer with no trailers, no advance imagery, just a poster with a sort of sketchy image of a heron on it. And then it's showed at a couple of festivals since then, but this is its debut in the UK. This is the first chance that UK audiences are going to get to see a brand new Studio Ghibli movie from Hayao Miyazaki with new music by Joe Hisaishi. That is an incredible thing. The film is really good, and there's a couple of screenings of it at the Royal Festival Hall, so that is an absolutely huge one. I know, Beth, you're a massive Ghibli fan as well, right?
Absolutely. I saw Joe Hisaishi at Wembley a few weeks ago, and he played one song from The Boy and the Heron, and it just brought the whole house down. So yeah, I am absolutely desperate to see that. Definitely in a big... wonderful festival setting as well, with lots of other big film nerds, which is what LFF is so good at doing. It's just sort of drawing in the best of them for these big, lovely, exciting previews. You know, there's such an extra thrill to, I mean, I know it's part of our jobs, but it's never lost on me that we get to see these things early, and it's nice to get to see it. But when we do, and I cry me a river here, but when we do see it, it's usually sat next to you guys with about four other people, being able to see this, you know, in a big festival setting with a big, lovely community around you. Much as I, you know, appreciated lockdown, LFF and what I was able to do, there's just something so wonderful about that live experience. So yeah, I'm so excited to get The Boy and the Heron in with all my Ghibli nerds.
Who's next? Who wants to recommend something next?
I would like to recommend Hitman, which is a new Richard Linklater film.
Yes.
Starring... also written alongside Glenn Powell of Top Gun Maverick and Set It Up and other stuff. Everybody Wants Some fame.
Everybody Wants Some and Apollo 10 and a half. So he and Linklater go together like links and laters.
Mm,
I don't know. Schools and rocks. I don't know.
And it also stars Adria Arjona from Andor. And it's about a guy who is kind of like a nerdy sort of... he's a philosophy professor, I think, and also works electronics with the police. He creates technology that bugs conversations when people try and elicit a hitman on someone and convicts them. So, but he ends up pretending to be the hitman that people are trying to commission. And I've seen it already, and it is such good fun. I haven't stopped thinking about it since I saw it. I want to see it immediately again. Glenn Powell is such a star. He gets to show such range in this because of kind of the plot and like this kind of acting role that he's doing as a character. It's tons of fun. It's very thrilling. It's really sort of sexy. It's probably one of my top films of the year, I'm going to say. I'm not sure if it's actually out this year or if it's out next year.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. Netflix have snapped it up.
Oh, yeah, it's Netflix. Yeah, this year.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. I have to say, I haven't seen it yet, but Glenn Powell is the real deal. I'm very much hoping that the actor strike will have ended by the time that this movie comes out, because I need to have closure on my Glenn Powell High Five Horror show, which was... this is the sort of thing that keeps me awake at night. It's completely inconsequential in the grand scheme of things, but whenever Everybody Wants Some came out, the company, the PR company, put on a film quiz and they invited loads of people. Like, they invited Empire and that other magazine that is dedicated to film in its totality. You know, I don't know what it's called, but you know, there are other magazines that are dedicated to covering film. And what they did was they would stick cast members on each of the teams, and they stuck Glenn Powell on the Empire team.
Oh,
and at one point, he and I teamed up to come up with an amazing answer, and Glenn Powell put up both of his hands to high five me across the table, and I just went. And I lifted my hands and I did an air high five, which is the lamest air high five you will ever see. And you could just see the disappointment in his face. And he was like, no, you need to do a real high five. And I was just like,
Why? The opportunity to high ten.
I'm so terrible. I'm so terrible at handshakes.
That wasn't a handshake. That's a double high five. There was no shaking involved.
I didn't. I thought it was.
You just had to put your hands in the air.
There was some shaking. Chris was absolutely trembling.
In that moment, I could see Glenn Powell, who previously had thought I was a cool guy. You could see that he was thinking, are we best friends? And in that moment, he just thought, no, dickhead.
Oh, Chris, you have to quit.
This is the end, I think. Yeah,
that's shocking. You've got to resign.
We're calling for an Empire reshuffle.
I want your badge and I want your gun. That is some shocking behaviour. Chris, you just got to put your hands in the air.
Like you just don't care.
I'm sorry. You could have been in Hitman, Chris. You couldn't have been there with them.
I know.
You could have been his
best friend. I'd like to issue a formal apology to Glenn Powell and in fact to other people whose handshakes I've mangled over the years, including but not restricted to Adam McKay, Nicole Kidman, and Nicholas Hoult. I apologize. I'm so sorry. I'm British.
Do you know what? I like someone who owns their mistakes, so you can stay.
Yay! That was a roller coaster ride. I'm back in the game. anything else you wanna recommend to people?
So yeah, I'm going to be a shill for the magazine that we all work for. So every year as part of the festival, we get to do a gala screening, don't we? So we get to sponsor a film. And this year, I am just so thrilled that we are putting on a British debut called How to Have Sex. It is by an amazing new filmmaker called Molly Manning Walker from London. And it is...
Is that her full name?
Molly Manning Walker from London.
From London.
Manning Manning Walker from London. Yeah.
Because I know you're hosting the gala, so you just need to get this right.
Yeah, yeah, the whole introduction. Molly Walker from London. and it is just this really bracing, brilliant... I've lost Chris. This really bracing, brilliant, like, fully formed debut. Like, you kind of watch it and you can't quite believe this is the first film she's made, because her voice as a filmmaker is just there right in front of you. And... it is about a trio of teenage girls who go on holiday to Malia. They've just finished school. They're just about to go on to college. Well, some of them are. And it's about this very boozy, sticky, sweltering, heated holiday that they go on. And some things go horribly wrong. But it's all kinds of shades of being a young person and being at a certain point in your life. And it's just amazing. And I'm so, so pleased that we get to throw our weight behind something like this and champion it from the ground up and be there for the start of what I'm sure is just going to be an amazing journey for her. And Mia McKenna-Bruce as well, who was the star of the film, is just absolutely blinding. Like, she's not from Is she from London? Me and the kind of from London. I think they're both from London.
There's a lot of triple barreled names on this film, yeah, so which I keep getting confused with. Yeah,
but she's great, and very excitingly, they're all going to be there. So we're going to have the whole gang. There's going to be six of them plus Molly, and it's going to be a real rollercoaster of names. I've got to announce them all, so that's going to be brilliant. But it's just going to be such a blast, and I'm so excited that we're going to be there for that. That's going to be on Tuesday the 10th at BFA South Bank, and I'm just absolutely gassed that we get to do that. So that's really exciting. There's just great British cinema, I think, this year. They always do, you know, if you can rely on LFF to do something really well, it's get British cinema, the best of British. You know, it's always a bit tough because it's tailing Cannes, it's tailing TIFF, it's tailing Venice. So a lot of the big boys have been put out there already. But in terms of like British cinema, they really do smash it. And this year they've got, you know, Saltburn open the festival this week, if we're talking in terms of that, and that's Emerald Fennell. We've got The Kitchen closing, which is Daniel Kaluuya producing and co-writing, I think, off the top of my head.
That's right, yeah.
Kibuye Tavares is directing. This is his directorial debut, and it's this amazing-looking dystopian London set film. They're both from London as well, by the way.
Daniel Kaluuya from London.
Daniel Kaluuya from London.
Sorry, to me, he's always Daniel Kaluuya from Skins. Forever.
Skins, yeah.
Posh Kenneth, always.
Do you know what? Do you want to hear something really funny? Another Beth story is I actually sat on the overground next to Daniel Kaluuya when he was coming home from the premiere of that film.
Did you high five him?
Did you touch his back?
I did both at once, guys. I did both at once. I gave him an amazing double high five and then a single high five, and then I touched his pec with the other hand. So we did all of that on the overground.
Nice. Wow.
But do you know what? It was really, I had a real moment when I, because obviously that happened. So I sat next to him on the overground. I was like, it's Daniel Kaluuya in a tux. And then I just had such a wonderful kind of full circle moment when I went to opening night a few years ago when it was Widows that opened, the Steve McQueen film, which is extraordinary. And I just remember walking past him on the red carpet, having a real moment, because that was after Get Out as well. So he'd really gone out into the stratosphere. And it was just so nice to walk past him, and everyone wanted to chat to him. Everyone wanted to get to know him. And I was like, I remember when we sat next to each other on the overground. I very much doubt you're getting the overground home tonight. Like, it's just, and I think LFF is just such a nice marker for stuff like that, you know. And now he's back and he's using his position to, you know, champion new filmmakers, and he's behind the scenes now helping out. And I just think that festival is just a really great way. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, coming back in a few years, and maybe Molly Manning Walker's done like a massive thing, or, you know, it's just such a great way to keep track of filmmakers and celebrate British talent, really.
I never see anyone famous on the tube.
I do a lot, actually. Who was the last one? Who's the politician that ate the bacon sandwich?
Ed Miliband.
There we go. Yeah. that was the last one. I don't know if he's a celebrity. Anyway, we digress. But yeah, Daniel Kaluuya on the overground was definitely, definitely the best.
Sounds like an amazing game of Cluedo. It was Daniel Kaluuya on the overground with the hard peck. All right, real quick, Ben, Sophie, do you want to throw any more films into that? I mean, there's so many here. I mean, Sophie very helpfully has compiled a list of some of the films that are going to be of interest for people. And we haven't even mentioned, like, have we mentioned Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget?
Well, only in my opening, but if you're talking about Best of British, then you're quite right there.
Yeah.
It's a big year for bird-based animations at the LFF.
Yeah, it is. The sequel, obviously, to the 2000 Chicken Run, absolute pillar of my childhood. I don't know about anyone else, but I was obsessed with that film as a kid, so I'm very, very excited to see it come back. If you check out the latest issue of Empire, you can read my set report when I went on set of Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget, and I visited Aardman, and I got to see them do the stop motion.
I'm fascinated by set visits to stop motion animation places. Yeah. Like, I was there for a year. I saw them shoot five seconds. It was incredible.
I saw one frame, but you know,
they said, "Sophie,
cool.
Please get off the set. It's made from clay. Stop standing on the set."
Is it literally so that squishy. You go on set of these things and you watch one person just press, like, move an arm, and you go, right, that's it, bye?
kind of. I got a really nice tour. Kind of. I learned lots of stuff.
Yeah.
other, I mean, we've got Oliver Strangers, which is Andrew Haig. That's really beautiful sort of drama starring Paul Mescal and Andrew Scott. I mean, Steve McQueen, you mentioned there, Beth, he's coming back with Occupied City, which is his documentary about the Holocaust, right? Which I haven't seen, but I very much want to. So it's great to see that he's coming back. I mean, like you say, there's tons of British talent.
Yeah. Yeah.
A couple of other standouts for me. The Holdovers, the Alexander Payne film The Holdovers, is another one that I saw out in TIFF, and it is so deeply wonderful. This is a film set over Christmas at a fancy boarding school, and it's about the kids who, for whatever reason, can't go home to see their parents over the school holidays. And so grumpy teacher Paul Giamatti has to stay at the school to look after specifically this one teenage boy, this unruly teenage boy, and the cook at the school is also staying over Christmas. And it's this just wonderful, lovely, really funny, warm, but quite spiky Christmas set movie about three lonely people forced to spend time together and how they kind of impact each other through these couple of weeks where they're just trapped in this school altogether. It is such a delight, and honestly feels like the sort of thing that might become a Christmas staple to watch every year going forward, like a very different sort of Christmas movie. It's not like, hey, here's Santa Claus's brother and he's trying to take over the factory. We've had a lot of those kind of Christmas movies. This is a very different sort of Christmas film, and I absolutely loved it. So huge recommend on that. And also, I don't know how many of us here have seen it yet, but Scorsese, man, Killers of the Flower Moon. Just, he does not miss. He is on an incredible run. You look at Wolf of Wall Street and then Silence and then The Irishman and now this. He is on an incredible run of very, very intentioned films, very powerful films. Killers of the Flower Moon hits in such a huge way, and you get De Niro and DiCaprio together. Yes, that is a huge deal. But Lily Gladstone in this film she will destroy you in all the ways. And yeah, if you already know about Scorsese, you already know about Killers of the Flower Moon, but it's at the LFF. And if you are in one of those screenings, you're in for such a treat.
You really are. It's a cracking lineup. It's another cracking year for the LFF. In partnership with American Express. And I think on that note, let's bring this to an end, because we all have screenings to go to, mainly. And interviews to do, and all kinds of things as well. This has been an absolute pleasure. If, of course, you want to find out more about the LFF, you can go to whatson.bfi.org.uk to buy tickets, to see what ticket availability there is, because a lot of these screens obviously are sold out. But tickets do become available at the last minute. So if you want to see Hitman, for example, give it your best shot. You never know. You never know. In the meantime, all that remains for me to say is thank you and goodbye to my three colleagues of such lethal cunning, Beth Webb of Swindon.
Thanks. Bye.
Sophie Butcher of Middlesbrough.
Goodbye.
Ben Travis of Nottingham.
Hello, goodbye. I still have a couple of tickets left for my screening of Fast 7 on the unofficial Vin Diesel strand of the LFF at my house. It didn't mean to sound as creepy as it does, but if you want to watch Fast 7, let me know.
It did, though.
Ben will feel your pecs. He wants to do that. He wants to make that happen. This is Ben's way of legitimizing what is, quite frankly, a fairly shonky practice.
I regret opening this doorway.
That's goodbye for me, Chris Hewitt of Banbridge. It's time for me to run all the way to the LFF. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.